minute, Crossfade.
The Daily Talk Show.
A conversation sometimes worth recording with Josh Jensen and Tommy Jacket.
105 of the Daily Talk Show.
What's up, guys?
It's Monday, Queen's birthday.
Yeah.
Most parts of Australia.
I just didn't even think about the part where it's the Queen's birthday, because I actually don't know if it is Queen's legit birthday.
No.
It feels like a Sunday here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
There's a great vibe. It is.
Where have you been?
Vibe. I've been at home. But just driving, you tell people are just laving the weekend. I went out for a coffee this morning and there's a lot more people out than even on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So it feels like people are just lapping it up.
We went to Cheerios Cafe just on Lennox Street.
Oh, you really ventured off your norm.
Yeah, yeah. Tommy's saying that because I go there a little bit. Is that
you
what
go every day? That's it. Actually, it's a Monday, so I guess it is your routine.
Yeah, but we sat down, had brunch.
Yeah.
We got one side of halloumi and bacon to share. Bree and I both got the same thing.
Okay.
So we got avocado, like toast. And then we said, can we get one side?
Mm.
And they ended up screwing up and giving us both bacon and halloumi.
Oh, well, you know you're not paying for that. Yeah. So you were bloody
yeah. It was great.
Very
yeah,
happy.
It was almost like a bit of a treat. They said, the chef got it wrong. Enjoy. But that's a lot of halloumi for one guy.
Yeah. Did you get what I said to you, or did you hear what I said to you when I spoke to you?
No, what did you say?
I said, you're out spending more than you need on something you don't probably need. About the breakfast. Isn't it ridiculous, the cost of breakfast?
Yeah.
How much did you spend? Let me guess. $52.50.
I think it was $53. you're pretty close. But I don't know. I think that it's the equivalent of, I mean, what would you pay in car repayments on your car?
Oh, I don't know. $300 a month.
Okay. So, like, because it's all relative, right?
But that's
so
functional for daily use.
But the thing is, this is my thing on, like, because I feel like there's a war on brunch that's happening or a war on coffee. It's like, yeah, I have spent less than $50 in my entire life on alcohol.
Yeah.
And that's including, like, I'm just saying $50 because I'm sure I've shouted something in some weird way where I've bought alcohol, but I've never bought alcohol. Mm. So when you don't have
the markup is ridiculous. I guess that I'm not even, because I do it too, right?
Yeah.
I buy breakfast out, so I'm.
You're part of the problem.
Yeah.
I just don't think but I reckon I think that you get caught up in the hyperbole that is the reason that we can't buy a house is because of avocado or
this
is
gonna.
I reckon
I'm far against that.
I reckon
plenty of people are buying houses. The whole point of being in debt is that you're taking someone else's money that you don't have.
Yeah.
Maybe the person bringing in a $200,000 savings to lower their mortgage is the person that probably doesn't buy avocado and toast. But...
Well, I just think it's all these choices. I reckon like we... I don't think that you... I think that there's an assumption that if you eat out and you spend money out...
Yeah.
...that you're somehow financially irresponsible.
Yeah, I think there is elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're not a part of it.
Yeah. Well, it's just like you just pick your battle. Like you just pick your battles. Yeah. You spend on some things. And so Bree and I don't go out. Like we don't like in the sense of it's not like we – like where I find that you'd spend so much money is in like the shouting culture of going out and getting drinks for people and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like I feel like if I was playing that game, I would be way over – paying than what I should.
Because you're generous.
Well, because I just naturally do that. And then I'm sure it would just be, before you know it, I'd be spending a lot of money.
Yeah. I spoke to a mate the other night. He dropped $1,000 out.
Yeah, it's crazy. So that's the thing. Like, this is the thing. Like, I mean, we have, it's just about prioritization.
Yeah.
Bree and I have an i30 that's through the company that we spent $15,000 on.
Yeah.
So it's like so everyone's got their different priorities, right? Mm. And I think for me, stuff like coffee, like you just do the math. Even Barefoot talks about it, Scott Pape. It's like you are not going to become super rich just by cutting out your latte.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree. I think there's habits and mindsets around it that are unique to the individual, meaning some people who are going out 5 days a week for breakfast, legitimately can't afford it. That's an individual case, though.
Yeah.
But maybe you can. Maybe you can drink coffee.
Well, yeah, I think that, yeah, there's definitely... There would be people who are living beyond their means. I think that you'd probably... If you buy a really expensive car, if you were to buy a Tesla before you were to buy a house, maybe you have it the wrong way around.
But then, maybe your priorities are
But maybe that's maybe you sleep in the Tesla. No, but the thing is that you might actually, there's so many factors. Like some people won't, some people don't see the end game as owning a house, which is another part. Like there's people I follow online who have a super successful business and they just lease like Airbnbs and stuff. And they go like, so they'll spend, you know, a month in Italy, then they'll go off and they'll go to South Africa. They go to all these different places.
So once you got two properties, there's probably not much chance of you doing that.
Yeah.
Because people are stretching themselves to get a property. But that's a nice lifestyle.
Mm.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
But it has to be in alignment with, it's like what we talk about fitness regimes. They have to be tailored directly to you and your goals, and if that is this person's goals of I want to be able to live remotely wherever I want for a month or three,
then it's aligned with what they want to do.
Then it's in alignment. Yeah, you're right. I got to, you know, we spent $10 on coffee this morning anyway, so
yeah. I mean, it's just never. It's interesting. Like you and I talk about it a bit. This idea of, you know, how you look at money. And I definitely have been of the school of if you hold it on too tightly, then you're probably too focused on your grip and not enough time on experiencing life. Or it's that idea of if you hold it so tightly or if you put it up so high, it's going to own you. It's going to become such a – every conversation is going to be about – money.
Yeah. Well, I think there's things in life like children that add new elements to the way you look at money. And it's, you know, thinking like you and I talked about putting money away for Bodhi. If you could put $100 a week away for the next 10, 15 years, he'd have a nice little amount of money that would be generating some good interest that would keep going.
And that's like, and that's the thing with kids and all that sort of thing. It's like, part of the reason that Bree and I haven't got kids is because we don't really think that we could afford, like we could do it in a way where it wasn't super stressful and a massive impact on the things that we want to do as well.
I think it's one way to look at it because I don't think it is the truth, because my dad lost $100,000 when we were young kids in a business that went pear-shaped.
Yeah.
And he was sending us to private schooling.
Yeah.
And he's lucky that he didn't lose our house and everything that he had.
But the thing, I reckon the thing is then it's a shift though, that if you're making that choice, it's this ownership of choice. And so it's not the, I can't afford X or I can't afford Y. It's, I don't want this or I don't want, I choose not to have this because I'm choosing this other thing.
But you stretch. And so my dad had to stretch himself to then make it work because it was the reality that he was in.
Yeah.
And it's like Amy and I, we're stretching ourselves for something that we can't just handball off Bodhi.
Yeah.
I mean, he could if you're a real piece of shit. But we're not going to. And we're making it work. In reality, Amy and I could be living in Bondi with the amount we're spending in a two-bedroom looking out over the water, $900 a week.
Does paying that,
$900 rent.
Do you have moments of thinking like where you think about that reality and you think about your choices, or is it when you have – is a kid – because it feels like the kids are those sort of sacred sort of area where it's like once you've done it, it's a done deal. So
– yeah, I think biologically – I feel like I say these things to you like the Bondi, but in reality, it's not really inside me.
Yeah.
The feeling that like, I could have had that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for some people, I don't know, I don't feel it at all. You see this, you see the kid smile.
But do you reckon this is almost part of, like say the mental health conversation or things like that, do you think that people aren't willing, like so what is it called, postpartum depression or whatever it is, you know, like the depression you can get after having a kid, whatever that's called. Mm-hmm. Do you think that part of the reason that people have that is because they have these feelings and there is this rhetoric or this conversation that it's we don't have these, you don't think, like biologically it doesn't really happen. Like it's okay to sometimes think like, you know what, like this is, to have those thoughts that you have around we could be living in Bondi.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to be having it every day because it's not from a mindset point of view. It's probably not great for you.
Having a kid, you're thrusted into this life that is brand new. So it's like already capacity stretching in a massive way.
Mm-hmm.
And for women, dude, what Amy went through and what women go through, like it shakes up your body and your mental. Like imagine you're drained of so many of your natural chemicals that you were creating.
Yeah, I can relate. I had 7 hours sleep the other day.
No, I mean, you can relate. You had an epidural.
Yeah, I've had an epidural. Yeah,
and it's a full-on thing, yeah. But then...
I didn't have something come out the size of a bowling ball.
You would have
ball
gone to the
out.
Toilet up.
So,
the point around people feeling depressed, for one, there's a chemical issue there, but for two, Amy was very sad.
Yeah.
Like, it's a reality check almost.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
But I think you get through it and it's like...
But is that... There's a lot. Do I look at that too practically then? Because I see
that... I think
that.
You'd look at
I see all of this stuff
practically.
And I'm like, yeah, this is... And that's not a reason not to do stuff. But I look at the... I think I put so much weight on having kids.
Mm.
And it's not even a selfish thing. It's a thing of wanting to give the best for kids and knowing that... The idea of just having a kid and then trying to figure it out, to me, from my life and from Brie and I, it's like we don't want to necessarily put that pressure.
Yeah,
on
you're
our
you're
family.
Very analytical on what happens in your head, and I think there is a lot of thought there because I think half of the thing with parenting is you can't be thinking logistically too much because
it doesn't make logistical sense to have a kid.
Having kids in this day and age is super hard. Like money financially doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like on your own time and your own career doesn't make sense. So that's where it's like, but people like my old man got through losing $100,000, sending his kids to private schooling, bringing us up well, still showing us love and all these things. So it's like, capacity, we talk about that a lot.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing, whether it's having a kid or whatever it is, I think that the learning is that we are adaptable.
Very adaptable, yeah.
And whatever that challenge is, we're normally way better probably than what we think to be able to take. You know,
we have a greater capacity than we feel.
Yeah.
At any moment, I think, for anything.
Uh-huh.
Funny thing, I was out with Jules Lund's wife. Jules is in America raising money for Tribe.
Okay, great. Raising money for Tribe sounds like it's a charity.
Well, almost.
he's
hoping it's a profitable one. But so we're out and his wife said, she was reflecting on Jules working. And always, you know, being away from work or whatever it be.
Mm-hmm.
She said, when I was in labor, Jules was on the phone to Josh Jansen. And Amy said, holy shit, when my waters broke, Tommy was on the phone to Josh Jansen.
When our mate's wife was in having contractions, I was over at his house collecting a light stand. Brian, I don't need kids. We've got everyone around us having them and we can be part. Does Anna remember the conversation that Jules
and I... No, it was because you were working on Fifi and Jules.
Yeah.
And so there was some... Do you remember it?
Oh, no, I do. I definitely remember it all sort of happening. I was so...
You were getting the social posts ready, Jules. What would you like it to say?
Yeah, definitely. I remember he came on, he was on air, between 4 and 6 p.m. and did announced it and all that sort of thing. Yeah, it's interesting. Sad news, end of last week, it's Monday today, Anthony Bourdain dying.
Yeah. Well, so I heard that. I mean, he's got, I love his shows. Mm. He's such an interesting dude, great presenter. And I hadn't really known much about him. And I saw it come out and I read the article and it's like, I saw his age and I immediately thought he's killed himself.
Yeah.
Because he's young. He's a young dude.
Well, I just thought my first reaction was like an overdose. Actually, I haven't read any articles since.
Yeah, I have.
So I don't know much. But the thing, I listened to Mark Maron, who has WTF with Mark Maron, the podcast, one of the biggest podcasts in the world.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had Obama on, didn't he?
Yeah. He had Anthony Bourdain on in 2011.
Yeah.
He gets rid of all of his older episodes, but he put that one out.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, sort of to celebrate his life. So interesting. I listened to the whole 70 minutes or whatever. Super interesting dude. A guy, you know, Anthony Bourdain is someone who sees himself as having had two lives. He was a massive junkie.
Mm.
And so, but he got beyond all of that. So he had, you know, a pretty terrible life. Well, it's this interesting sort of contrast of from a pretty well-off family, but then just sort of doing the whole sort of chef thing and enjoying the lifestyle that was being high and working and all that sort of thing.
Amazing. He was a heroin addict as well at some point. I don't know how that fits into actually keeping a job, but maybe, I mean, there are some functioning heroin addicts. It's so scary. I mean, he was taken by that and then came back. That's amazing because I never knew that history until recently about him being a heroin addict. And you see him and he seems like this together, you know, well-spoken, you know, driven dude on his shows. Like, I mean, he's presenting.
Well, someone who is, I think what I find interesting is that he's a guy who that has been extremely celebrated.
Mm.
And he's, I think that what he represents, I think, is a lot of positivity for many people, which is like you can have all these things happen to you in your life, but you can choose to have a second life. Yeah. You can choose to whatever's happened to shift and and people will. The thing is, he talks about, he's like, I've bankrupted a lot of people who have bought into my shit over the years. Okay. Where it's like, he's like, you know, he would, you know, come into a restaurant and speak to the owner and say, you know, like, this is what you need to do. And he'll throw out a few French terms to describe the different types of food that he'd make. Mm. And he would get the job. And he was just like full of shit. He would just, I don't even know if he necessarily knew that he was full of shit. He just, he had a real high regard of what he did.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is the more successful he's gotten, the more you hear him coming to the realization that none of it really matters.
Well, I think you see people like him and then Avicii, who also took his own life. And you see these, like, it's such a clear thing. Success doesn't determine your happiness. Money doesn't determine your happiness. Like, when you see it at that scale, like him, the achievements and the, you know, internal conquering he's done of demons, it still isn't enough, right? His friend was on, my dad told me this, his friend, he heard them talking on ABC radio.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been taken from an interview she'd done. And she said, it is a permanent solution to a temporary problem, meaning taking a life and the way you're feeling right now. And I was like, fuck, it is so true, because as much as, you know, depression, you might not get rid of it.
That's our doorbell. We've got a guy named Andrew, Bree's friend, picking up some free plates, which if you've ever listened to our episode about Gumtree, you'll know that somehow whenever we give shit away for free, it becomes a massive ordeal.
Yeah.
And we end up putting in way more work.
Well, I hope Andrew just takes them and really gets out of here. No, but it's, you know, I think about all my friends that have taken their lives, and like I know that they haven't felt that deep sadness at every moment of every waking minute of their life, and so that's I that really rang true for me, that a permanent solution.
What about this idea, what, you know, this is a weird area to talk into, but what about this idea of diminishing returns? Like, what about if he felt that he's like he'd peaked and that all these, like, yeah. you know, and he's in this pain. Like, I think that that's this interesting thing of, it's like we're celebrating Anthony Bourdain now. Mm. And he's, you know, I guess it's just a really, this interesting thing where in his mind, he's like, okay, yeah, I wonder where he was from a mindset point of view. Can you, I guess that the hypothesis is that you have to be completely mentally unstable to do that. But I wonder if there was, what was the details of, like, did they go into it? Like,
they haven't released.
Yeah. So I don't, like, because I mean, would he have practically said, it's like, okay, I'm looking, like, I'm 61 years old or whatever it was. Yeah. It's like, okay, what's the, has he looked at the next 20 years?
I would tend to think that it is not as thought out like that. Yeah. I don't think you're in fog. Yeah. You're in this.
Well, is it
foggy existence where it is you have to think about it. I think about my mate who killed himself jumping off a bridge.
Yeah.
And I think about the moment I put myself in his shoes, and that's not the dude I know who would converse with me about everything, and his clarity was not there.
Mm-hmm.
He was emotionally charged in that moment.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that scares me most about and makes me so sad is listening and hearing about how someone has done it and thinking about where they were at that moment.
Yeah, because it is as you said, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
And they think it's the only solution that time. Yeah. And so I asked Amy, it got me pretty dark, but I said to Amy, have you ever thought about killing yourself?
Mm.
And she said, yeah, when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And she went into some details about some stuff. But she said, I never felt like I would actually do it.
Yeah. I think that I've used it as a tool to create clarity. I've said, what if it's all over right now? Like, you know, if it was, then it's easier to have the harder conversations, right?
But, I mean, that's pretty clear. I mean, I think that's
it's probably the equivalent of, like, if I was hit by a bus tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's the same. I think legitimately thinking about it is different. And I'm sure a lot of people, like, I've definitely thought about it, but it never truly, if I think about it, been something that I would have done. And it was only ever at a time where I had so much fogginess about where I was, where I was going, what I was doing. And it comes from being in pain and feeling like, is there the solution to my pain?
Mm.
Is this the solution to the pain I'm feeling?
Yeah.
And so,
do you think it's driven, is suicide driven by ego?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know where ego fits in the equation.
Well, ego is, I guess it's how we look at ourselves, our identity. And it's like, it's the point in which, the way that I would see suicide is it's reflecting on your identity. Well, maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's not even as deep as that. Maybe it's literally like you've got a severe amount of pain inside of you, and this is in some regards, it feels like the easiest way.
This is a solution to pain. I think that's, shortly summarizing it, because if you think about it, that's what people think. That is the solution.
Yeah.
To this thing I'm feeling right now. It's full on.
Yeah. This is like all these sorts of conversations is like the reason why I even think about like the whole kids thing and not having kids. Like I was reading some article the other day where it's like this futurist is saying that there's like a 80% chance that the whole world will be finished in like 50 years and a 99% chance that it will be finished in 80 years. So I just
feel sorry for that dude living in his mind if he truly believes it.
No, but if that is that the like maybe that is the real, like, I don't know, maybe that is like the reality.
Mm.
Like, how much longer? I just have these moments of what matters.
Mm.
Like, what
Yeah. Well, I look at Bodhi and I think about all these things. I made a video that was of my brother's baby, and it was just about, it was like a video for her, to her.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, the sort of driving force behind it was me thinking about all of this stuff, mm-hmm. the challenge that people face, young kids transitioning, I know for me, into being an adult, and how unclear it is, and there's no manual about how to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, in those moments where my friend was about to do it, thinking that no one was there for him or loved him or felt, you know, because a lot of people
but
say...
But do you think that that's... Do you
well, I
really
think a lot of people
that-
say... I think a lot of people say in their last moments are, this will be better for everyone else. And that is a massive amount of fog in their mind because...
But do you think that's a reflection on the people around them or the
no,
internal state? Because that's the
it's
thing.
It's internal state. But I think it's... I think for the majority of people... And I'm talking for the majority... I'm talking... I think more so the people around, people who are unwell,
mm-hmm.
are actually loving them and there for them, and they're going through something internally. And I and sure
but you have I'm to accept love. So the thing is, people might be loving them and all that sort of thing, but if it's maybe their ability, like I don't, it's their ability to accept that around it. And if they can't, if they're not, if they don't love themselves, if they can't reconcile that part, then it's very hard to let that in from around them.
There's a type in Jordan Peterson talking about suicide onto YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he's a clinical psychologist,
yeah.
dealt with thousands of people with, you know, talking about this stuff.
Yeah,
and he got this, and he's reading through this email that he got from a father whose daughter had taken her own life,
mm-hmm.
and he was... Jordan was talking and it was so fucking scary because he said there are some instances where there is no helping these people. And that's from someone who understands the brain better than majority of the population.
Yeah.
And he said, but it doesn't mean that you don't try everything.
Well, I think that the other thing that probably suicide, you know, thinking about suicide and talking about it does is maybe... reflecting on the thing before, like we can't control suicide. We don't live with, you know, yes, we live with suicide, you know, people committing suicide, but it's the things before it that we can actually can control. So it's like, it's not like people go from happy to suicidal. There's this huge, you just have to go to Flinders Street McDonald's to see that there are so many people that are struggling.
Yeah, but I think the difference in someone who does it, like think about all the homeless people.
Yeah.
They're not, like, I don't know how many, what the data is, but they're not killing themselves. It's not necessarily the people who you think are going to do it. And it, exactly the case in some of the friends that have taken their own lives. I could not fucking believe it. I could not believe it. Like, yeah. The person they were, I never knew they battled that hard.
Yeah.
Or that, and that was why. And so I've gone there in thinking about somebody and knowing them well and them doing and them actually doing that and thinking about that. Like, it's full on.
Yeah.
And so when you see someone that you go, dude, like the conversations we had, the bubbly they were, mm-hmm. the happiness they seemed, maybe a bit up and down, but the hiding of their true feelings internal was so good, as in they put on a really great front.
Do you think it's a hiding? Like, what do you think?
No, I mean, they're not, the people I'm talking about weren't seeming really sad and just so down. And so it's not, what I'm saying is that that's not always the way it yeah. shows itself.
Well, look at Robin Williams or, you know, there's lots of examples. Yeah, it's like I even feel like with my extreme personality that I'd be more predisposed to this sort of stuff. So I try and think about it more and I try and like keep it in check, you know, in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's difficult. You'd be happy to know that Bree, did you get rid of the plates? The plates are gone, everyone.
Just in case you
want. Just in case we want. We're closing the loop. I'm trying to bring a little bit of zing, light to the shade.
I think all this stuff makes you feel. It makes you think about what's important. Mm-hmm. And if I had no business, you know, I didn't have any career, and I had my wife and my baby, and like that, the where what brings you joy in life,
mm-hmm.
and that definitely brings me joy, my family, and you know, and so what matters, and that's what I'm saying. It's like when something's stressing you out, that's so irrelevant.
I've
to
definitely
the
said that
picture.
To Bree, where I'm like, you know, I could be.
She's standing in the doorway looking at you behind you.
Perfect. I could be hit by a bus tomorrow. And that gives you can't pull that card every single time you get told off for leaving the undies on the ground.
Well, there's one thing. If you got hit by a bus tomorrow, you'd stink because your fucking jumper has been on for 3-4 weeks in a row.
It's going well.
Bree
it's
was still behind you nodding.
it's fine. I'm actually going to wash it in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
I think it's just it's a moment to reflect. What do you think that you naturally reflect on when this news happens?
I've been thinking a heap about what happened.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I'm just I've thought about this so much with so many people in my world taking their own lives. It's like.
What are the signs? Are there signs?
Not necessarily. My friend who I talked about on the bridge,
mm-hmm.
he messaged me on... It was MySpace then.
Yeah.
He messaged me on MySpace. No, MySpace. No, what was that messaging service?
AIM, MSN.
MSN. So me and him used to just go hard on MSN.
Yeah.
And he said to me... something like, bro, you haven't been hanging out with me or something like that. I just remember reading through the logs after he passed away.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my God. Like you start looking retrospectively at any little thing. And that's what I mean. Maybe there's not warning signs.
I mean, what did the psychologist, like what did the therapist say? Did you saw the therapist after that? Or was that? Is it never? Because like...
not about that specifically.
Because you can't like... retrospectively look back at these things and say, oh, I could have done something here
it didn't
or there.
It didn't tear me apart, but I was thinking far out, like, you know, that's someone who's not a cry for help, but it's like you...
There was an example of disconnection.
Disconnection where, I don't know, now you could message me, bro, you're not answering.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Josh.
Yeah.
You're like, but I wouldn't know, you know? Yeah. And so that's what I mean. I don't know if there is. And especially, I mean... I think actively asking someone how they're doing and me, like, I would never have sent that message. I said it on the podcast. I saw that dude who I used to go to the gym with. He was a younger kid and I saw him at an event the other week and he said to me something like, I've been at the end, or he's like, I've been hanging on or something like that. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And he said it in front of his mum and to me. And so I messaged him and I said, bro, so good to see you. Sounds like you've got a really good plan ahead of you. You know, life's hard to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing well, bro. Just hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote back the nicest message. Thank you so much.
It wasn't who dis.
He didn't say who dis. He wrote back, thank you so much, man. That means a heap to me. And I was like, that is just something that I picked up on a sign.
Yeah.
But how would I have known that unless I've had all these people?
Yeah, it's tough.
Like, it's a way to jolt you into really thinking about how people are communicating to you when it happens to you. So maybe the thought is just think about friends around you. Ask them. That's those. What's the campaigns around?
Are you okay?
It's like just initiating conversation could jolt someone out of that. Oh my God, this life means nothing. I mean nothing. You know, because it might just make you go, oh, hang on, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
Because hopefully it is just fog and it can be lifted. So, I don't know. Ask someone. Give them a fucking hug.
Yeah. And I think it's also trying to bring this sort of mindset beyond these, you know, issue, like, you know, these instances where things happen, right? Where it's like, how do we 365 days a year have the mindfulness and the self-awareness to be thinking about these things rather than waiting for these terrible things in the world to happen And also, like, the reality is that we knew a character that was Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, there's a lot of people who were, you know, his family, close friends, colleagues, camera people dealing with him, working with him every day.
Yeah.
And that's the people that I think about as well.
I empathize with people who have people like that in their world, just, you know, sticking in there. What more can you do? Just being there for them if they need and just loving them, because what else can we do, really? Yeah.
Before we go,
we need some thank yous.
Yeah, on the email, hi@thedailytalkshow.com. Kathleen, listening from London,
so good,
has been telling all of her friends, all four of them at this point. But slowly, but surely.
She said she converted three to converted start three. Listening.
It sounds like a cult.
Well, we are.
We are a slight cult,
and we also got one from David Shiraz.
Yeah, who's at Canberra FM.
Yeah,
he's a
Juno,
having a crack at the
com radio,
yeah,
commercial radio. Thanks, dude. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I like that you cleared that up. Not community radio.
Big difference, especially if you're having a crack.
No, it's good. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please send those emails. Always curious to get your take on these things as well.
Yeah, 100%.
We've got two guests for the next 2 days. So tomorrow we have Rob Ward of Quadlock, the Quadlock iPhone case. And the day after, we have Peter Shepherd, who is a creative coach and one of the coaches for the Alt MBA, which is the course that Seth Godin started.
Two-meter Peter.
Yeah, two-meter Peter.
He's a big, big boy.
Two-meter tweeter on Twitter.
Oh, is that he? Yeah,
he's really... Man, he's done well with the brand. I like that. I remember his name.
I just typed in before to Google 2 meter Peter.
Yeah.
Did he play footy ever?
No, I don't think so. Why?
Because there's a footy player that played for the Gold Coast, or Greater Western Sydney, that was 2 meters, and his name's Peter, and so he got confusing. Called 2 meter Peter. Slight confusion.
That's fine. He's also known as the human periscope. Which is cool. He's got like a really cool logo. You know, like a periscope I'm doing like a thing with my hand.
Yeah.
Anyway, The Daily Talk Show, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. Love you.
Hope you're doing well. Bye.